Hi, everyone. And probably in contrast to a lot of the conversations that we've had up to now, where we've talked a lot about research, mine is really going to be talking more about moving policy into practice and looking at research and trying to translate that into improving asthma outcomes, particularly for workers. So let me just see, are we okay? So I just wanted to say that one of the things that I'm going to be focusing on is a new publication put out by the Asthma Regional Council of New England and the University of Massachusetts Lowell, where we called the Asthma a Business Case for Employers and Healthcare Purchasers, and how we came about working on that. And Dr. Polly Hoppin from UMass Lowell and Molly Jacobs and myself are the authors of it, and we don't have any relationships to disclose. What I'd like to start off by saying is that the Asthma Regional Council brings together government officials and academics and health providers and others around the New England region to look at asthma. And one of the ways that we sort of move our policies and practices is to look at data. And so over the last 5 to 6 years, we've been putting all of our BRFSS data together that ask questions about asthma to help us pinpoint where we want to focus our work. And over the 5 years, we've found some consistent things. One is that New England appears to have among the highest rates of asthma in the country as a region. And even at our last look at this, when we controlled for a number of demographic factors, New England continued to have the highest rates. When we disaggregated the levels of asthma, when we saw that it continued to increase even over the last 5 years, where asthma seems to be leveling off, when we disaggregated it by sex, actually, we found out that actually the rates of asthma are increasing amongst women, but it has leveled off with men. That low-income people have higher prevalence rates. But what we did find is that people of color and low-income people have the highest burden in terms of hospitalizations and severity. This time, what we found doing an asthma callback survey, where we actually called back those people on their BRFSS who indicated that a family member had asthma, 14% indicated that they could not afford the medications that they were given for asthma, which is pretty significant. And then a couple of other new issues emerged. One was, and this was really striking, where we felt that, well, we understood that asthma was well controlled in the population. We actually found that 2 out of 3 adults and children, if you looked at the measures of control by the national guidelines, their asthma was either poorly or very poorly controlled, which was really disturbing. And that actually, that finding has been replicated by a number of other states who have looked at their asthma callback survey. So it's not, specific to the asthma region. And then what we also found was that adults with current asthma were more than 3 times as likely to be unable to work as those without the disease. So now we're going in the opposite direction. Okay, so one of the other things that we found that was really important was this asthma callback survey asked a number of questions about connections between work and asthma. And what we found out was, and this is self-report for people who answered the phone, is that 40% of adults who had asthma felt that their workplace either contributed to their asthma in some way, either exacerbated the symptoms or actually initiated their symptoms, which was quite striking to us and was higher than what you would find in much of the literature, which says that it's about 10 to 25%. So, and that again has been replicated by many other states looking at this, that there is a perception that there is a big correlation between people's workplace and their asthma, and that actually people who are in the lower incomes felt as much as 60% of their asthma was job-related. And 17% of people with asthma who work had to change their jobs because they felt that their workplace was affecting their asthma and they could no longer work there. And that was a higher percentage in the lower income brackets. So what I'm going to focus on, the Asthma Regional Council sort of has the four P's of their pillars of trying to improve asthma in our region, and we are working a lot now with payers, health insurers, public and private health insurers, to get them to align their payment practices with best practices for asthma. We're also trying to get providers to do the right thing and to actually prescribe and be more knowledgeable about best practices. We're trying to work with policymakers to help to maybe affect healthcare reform to ensure that best practices are followed. But what we wanted to do in this session is really focus on large purchasers and employers who contract with payers to help them encourage them to ask for reimbursement for their employees for best practices for asthma. And when I say large purchasers, we're not just talking about employers. I believe that unions can use this information for sure to help try and get the best coverage for their employees, as well as maybe state purchasers as well. So we published a business case for employers and healthcare purchasers. This was published by Dr. Polly Hoppin and Molly Jacobs at UMass Lowell and myself from Health Resources in Action. And I'd like to go through a little bit what this covers and why it's important. And why we decided to use a business case is because we believe that employers really are motivated by what it's going to cost them to do the right thing. And we wanted to show them that doing the right thing would actually be cost effective as well as help their employees. So one of the first things I wanted to say was that we did some research on how asthma affects the business community. And of course, it's one of the top 10 conditions asthma is affecting employees. And what's unique about it as a chronic disease is it really affects the whole age spectrum, where many chronic diseases such as CVD, diabetes tends to affect people as they get older. Asthma affects the youngest of children to the elderly and workers, so that employees, thus, who have to take care of their parents and their children, will their productivity itself will be affected by that. The literature says that the work environment is responsible for about 10 to 15% of new onset adult asthma, and in addition is responsible for triggering attacks in another 10%, but as you saw by that BRFSS data, it might be much more significant. So we also wanted to look at, well, what is it costing employers? You know, why should they be motivated to do something better about improving asthma in their workforce? And, you know, basically, you know, you can look at this in two ways. We've been doing some a business case for healthcare payers. You know, what does it cost them to, or not cost them, but how can they save money by instituting best practices and reimbursing for best practices? The employer community not only is interested, or should be interested in, how this is costing them in terms of direct healthcare claims, in terms of unscheduled physician visits, emergency room visits, hospital visits, but per capita, employers expend about 2.5 times more money on their health claims for asthma, employees with asthma, than employees without asthma. And it's costing the nation about $15 billion. And much of that is preventable in terms of hospitalization. And also, employees with work-related asthma almost are more about 5 times more likely to have an asthma attack or visit the ER at least once than employees who do not have what we consider work-related asthma. But in addition to the direct healthcare costs, there are many indirect healthcare costs that businesses or social costs that they have to deal with, including employee absenteeism, not only because of because the worker is sick, but because, as I mentioned, their children or their parents might be sick. Children, I believe have this somewhere. I believe that they miss, 13 million school lost days per year across the nation because of their asthma. And between 1990 and 2000, the costs associated with the time adults lost from work due to caring for a sick child had increased by 88%, and that's because the asthma epidemic has increased. So it's not only the absenteeism that workers experience, but a term that we learned in doing this work is presenteeism. And presenteeism actually costs employers more than worker absenteeism. And presenteeism is defined as those workers who come to work, but they're sick, and therefore their productivity is lower, or because they're worried about a family member who might be at home sick, and thus they're being distracted. So according to the American Lung Association, these indirect costs amount to $5 billion, and the American Hospital Association estimates about $23 billion to employers due to these indirect costs to employers. So this is the business case for why they should care about doing the right thing. So we tried to figure out then, how can we show employers that if they were to do the right thing around asthma, and by the way, we're talking about delivering best practices for asthma, more than preventing asthma in this case. And actually, around asthma, that in the workplace, that is one area where we can really talk about primary prevention, because we know about, and University of Massachusetts Lowell has identified a number of asthmogens in the workplace that really, if we got rid of them and substituted them, we can do a better job. But we're going to be focusing more on promoting the best practices. And so how does an employer think about a business case? And so there are three areas that you would want to ask about whether best practices is a business case for an employer. One is, does it actually improve employee health? A second is it profitable? For every dollar that is invested in a new service or a new coverage, will it actually result in a return on investment or avoided costs? That is the strongest business case for an employer, but also a third way of looking at a business case is cost effectiveness. In other words, for every dollar that you put into getting a better health outcome, if you were to compare that new dollar to the standard care, in other words, medications, for instance, and get a similar outcome, that would be considered a cost-effective business approach. And there is the AHRQ Asthma Return on Investment Calculator could be very useful to employers and health plans in trying to figure out, you know, based on their employee population, whether they would get a return on investment or whether their new service would be considered cost effective. But we reviewed the evidence ourselves, and we really looked at a high bar of research, published studies that were randomized control trials or published pre-post evaluations, looking at trying to put forward the best practices for asthma as put forward by the National Health Lung Blood and Blood Institute, NHLBI. They have an asthma expert panel that puts out new guidelines for best practices. Their most recent was in 2007. And there are basically four components that the NHLBI puts forward for best practices for asthma. Good monitoring and assessment of lung function through spirometry and other means. Good pharmacotherapy in terms of, you know, controller and rescue medications and the like. A third is supporting a partnership of education in between the provider and the patient so that the patient can learn how to self-manage their disease effectively. And the fourth component is really talking to them about environmental triggers that they might be exposed to and figuring out how to get rid of those triggers so that there'd be less exacerbations. So we really try to look at promoting the business case. And I will say that in the areas of the first two components, assessment and pharmacotherapy, generally the clinical sector does a pretty good job. But what we have found that in the areas of proactive care, such as providing good asthma education and environmental triggers, we're not doing such a good job. And part of that is because those services are not being reimbursed. So we really focused on those last two areas of care. What is the business case for investing in those areas? And over the last couple of years, there have been some really good studies that show what the business case is. And we really focused on the cost implications, not just the health implications, of putting these four recommended strategies. So you've got the Asthma Education and Prevention Program, which is part of the NLBI, the Centers for Disease Control, their Task Force and Community Preventive Services, did a study of, they looked at 13 different studies to look at the cost benefit of doing environmental interventions in the home, and I'm going to discuss that in a moment. And NIOSH showed in 2002 an analysis that showed cost-effectiveness of improving indoor air quality in non-industrial work settings. But I will say that there is not a whole lot of robust information. 2 minutes? Okay. In this area. So we looked at case studies, and just sort of to give a quick overview, in terms of asthma education, for every dollar invested, particularly for high-risk people with persistent asthma, you've got a return on investment. And for doing home-based environmental trigger remediations, those are considered cost-effective. Providing case management also provides a return on investment. And so based on the literature, what we've done is we've basically focused on three areas where we think employers should get more involved, align their insurance coverage with best practices, do more with worksite health promotion that support employee asthma self-management, and promoting asthma-friendly work environments. I have to go through this quickly. I'm just going to say that in our report here, we talk about basically how employers can negotiate with their insurance companies to get those best practices covered, and we've also published an insurance coverage for asthma so that it makes it easier for employers when they go out to negotiate what are the components that they should make sure that they're asked for, including the coverage of the less traditional providers like community health workers, certified asthma educators, and doing home visits. We also focus on some of the employers who are doing some great worksite education, doing asthma education for their workforce, providing disease management services and home visits, and sponsoring flu clinics. And then our third area is really to promote good housekeeping practices to actually encourage employers to keep their own work environments clean and reduce exposures to asthmogens, work on substituting those asthmogens with safer alternatives, and making appropriate accommodations for individual employees who are suffering. Reducing copayments, there's a lot of studies that show that if you reduce the copayments of the asthma medications, they'll be used more, et cetera. So our conclusions are that employers and purchasers can cost-effectively improve employee health by aligning their coverage. There are very few employers who do all of it, who provide on-site management, who improve their workplace and request employee coverage, but I think that that's something that we really want to focus on. And we hope that people will look for these tools that we have made available. None of them are copyrighted. I brought copies for people who would like some, but they can all be downloaded from the Asthma Regional Council, asthmaregionalcouncil.org. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact me at hria.org. Thank you very much.